Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is May 7th, 2015. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Coming up, I'll be in Auckland on May 23rd. The global rebalancing proceeds to go to a wonderful school and institution. You can learn more about it and the event up on the website. And then back to Sydney, where I will be starting this coming week. I will be talking about Planet Debt and joined by wonderful entrepreneur Jason Bawden-Smith. For those of you who attended our workshop in California, you met him last November. That's Sydney, June 2nd. If you're down under, certainly come. If you're not, send it to friends of those that you have in New Zealand and Australia. We'd love to see them come out. We have Richard Dolan committed, believe it or not, for an April 30, 2016 lunch in New York. Hold that date. I have the report of the event on the website. It's called Lunch with Catherine and Richard Dolan in New York City. I haven't had that much fun since before my fight with the federal, with the Department of Justice began. And it was pretty magical, and we've gotten wonderful feedback, and so Richard has agreed that we'll do it. We don't normally commit to lunches way in advance, but this one is special. So more on that in the new year. Our theme tonight is the race to call the top. I'll be publishing a commentary on the website about it on Monday. Literally, at the beginning of this week, you had to ask the question, who flipped the switch? Did Mr. Global flip the switch? First, we saw Goldman Sachs, who led the pump and then dump of the housing market, announce the U.S. stock market bull was coming to a close, and then Fed Chairman Yellen warned that equity valuations were high. But that was just the beginning, because then we had a chorus of people calling the top in the global bond market, which has seen interest rates fall since 1980. Now, this is something we've talked about for several years on the Solari Report, so you're not a stranger to the topic. It's clear that interest rates could only go so low. We've seen them go through the first floor and into the basement with negative interest rates around the world and many sovereign debt, particularly in Europe this year with their quantitative easing. So it had to come to a close at some point. We saw Warren Buffett and Bill Gross announced that the slump in the 30-year bond was made perfect sense. Bond King, CEO of Double Line, Jeffrey Gundlach, called the bottom in interest rates, therefore the top in prices. And the Fortress Principal announced that the bull market in bonds is over. This is going to be a very enormous turn, but it's going to be a very obvious one. Clearly, the bond managers who are sitting on big portfolios need to be very nervous. If you're a mutual fund or ETF, you could be looking at enormous redemptions. The question is, how do you sell? There's real concern about liquidity in the market because most of the big financial institutions have cut their staffs and pulled capital, and they really are not the market makers that there was when the bond market was in its trajectory upwards. So there's lots of nervousness on the fixed income desks. If you haven't seen the movie Margin Call, I really recommend it to you to understand how nervous things can get when there are real concerns that the market's going to fall and liquidity is going to dry up. Global stock market is a very different matter, despite what Yellen and Goldman Sachs said. U.S. equities have been able to digest interest rate rises of 100 to 150 basis points. That's the concern when the Fed, if and when the Fed raises interest rates, probably in the fall, the concern is that it's going to hammer all markets, including equities. Now, the U.S. market is seriously overdue for a major correction, and we're coming into summer, which is a time which is generally flat historically. I put up the on the site, it may be at the bottom of the site or onto the next page, so you may have to click back, a chart that shows traditionally how the sell in May and go away strategy works, because the summer months usually most 95% of the gains historically in the U.S. equity markets have come between November and June, or November and May, and so June to November is historically relatively flat. If the S&P does correct, it doesn't. One, it's healthy for the market. We need a correction. Far too many sort of financial methadone tricks have been used to keep up corporate earnings. Keeping that corporate earnings up has not only hurt corporations, they've done horrible damage, I feel, to the economy. So I think it's time for those tricks to be over and for us to go back to basics. So some kind of consolidation is more than warranted. At the same time, we've seen the U.S. shoot way ahead of Europe and Asia. And part of this just may be that Europe and Asia are now going to catch up. With the European QE underway and financial reforms and improved capital liquidity in China, it would not surprise me to see as the U.S., if it consolidates, to see Europe and China start to catch up. Now, there is a possibility that Mr. Global has given the orders to pull the plug, because if you look at the choruses this week, it really was very orchestrated. It looked like somebody had sent out a fax on a campaign. I call it the fax back service. So the fax back service had told everybody to sort of call the top. The reality is, if Mr. Global has pulled the plug, and I don't necessarily think that he has, then it's time to dust off the D word that everyone is desperately trying not to say. That's D for deflation. So we'll have to see what unfolds for the next couple weeks. Is this a healthy correction? Is it Mr. Global pulling the plunge protection team from the field, or are there wild cards at play? So let's just see what unfolds. Okay, money and markets with global markets correcting. Let's look how things rack up for the year. So far this year, U.S. dollar index is up 5.7%. It was up 11% in March. So that's basically it's cut its year-to-date gains in half. The DAX is leading the pack. That's the German top 30 stocks. It's up 20% for the year now. It's correcting off. If you look at both China large caps up 18%. China and Germany have run way ahead of their moving averages. So it looks to me like they're just coming back down to the trend line. And I expect, given what's going on in both areas, we'll probably see that trend line continue up, but we'll just have to see what happens. The developed markets minus North America up 8.7% for the year. Who can believe it? You know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen. We were all ready to race out of the emerging markets at the beginning of this year, but the emerging markets up 7.7%. Gold up 3.59%. Part of the emerging markets being up is commodities have started to bump up a little bit. And the S&P now up 1.41%. The safe havens all down. Gold down 0.1%. AGG, the bond aggregate, down 0.17%. TLT, the long ETF for the long treasury, down 3%. So all the safe havens are not so safe. The moral of the story is that rising interest rates can send those safe havens out of the safety zone. And again, I would really encourage you to see that sell in May, go away chart to remind us of sort of where we're coming into. If you go back through the old equity reports, I cover several times the probability of how often we should get a 10 to 25% correction in a long-term bull up. I think you have a bond market that is more than double the size of global equity markets. And as we come into the turn in the bond market, the question is, where is that kind of cash going to go? And I just don't see how you don't get a lot of it moving into real assets, whether it's real estate, commodities, or the equity markets. Okay, several commentaries up this week on the site. I got asked the question last Monday, what's really happening in Baltimore? Well, it was amazing the speed, rather than having to do a lot of serious investigation, the speed at which information poured out was impressive because the old tricks are not working. They fell flat on this one. Pretty quickly, the Blood and Crips gangs in Baltimore had a press conference announcing they weren't rioting. In fact, they had organized to help protect the businesses and were being attacked as they tried to protect the businesses. Great post on Zero Hedge, which I republished, of 10 questions or 12 questions to ask on Baltimore. The first one being, why is it that the social media websites that were inciting riots in Ferguson also inciting riots in Baltimore? Well, of course, right after the riots happened, suddenly, ba-boom, you have the Democratic candidate Clinton announcing sweeping criminal justice reforms at Columbia. I put the video up in the commentary, interestingly enough. Lots of empty chairs. Clearly, don't fall for the heartstrings. The DOJ and central control of local police forces is not what you want. One of the greatest protections under the Constitution is the local sheriff, which is separate from the police. controls and can back the feds out. But if the feds control the police force, that's a circumvention around those local powers. I think this is related to the inability to get gun control. If you look at what the feds are planning in terms of mandating healthcare and education, we're talking about sweeping privatization that will wreck local economies and be very antithetical to the health of both the civilization and the economy in general. It's more shrinking of the economy to roll it up into private monopolies supported and subsidized by taxpayers forced to do so when they have no input or say. You know, you're basically mandating markets from consumers who don't want what you're selling. So it's not surprisingly the Common Core is such an important issue. It turns out it's rising to the top in the Iowa caucuses. The candidates are now out hustling support in what is not the first primary technically, but the Iowa caucus is a very important indicator before the New Hampshire primary. It turns out that Common Core is at the top of the list, and particularly on the Republican side, and it has Jeb Bush in seventh place. Can you imagine seventh place, Common Core being a big reason why? I also had a chance when I was at the gym to watch a discussion with Bernie Sanders, who is a senator, independent senator from Vermont, who's running for president now. And he was proposing all sorts of great reforms, including that we provide free tuition for anybody who wants to go to college in this country, as some of the Scandinavian countries do. It all sounds perfectly wonderful until you realize, well, wait a minute, that money gives power to the federal government to dictate terms to state universities. And so we could literally see Common Core happen at the college level as it's being dictated at K through 12. Sounds wonderful until you dig in and realize, look, you cannot do deals with people who are not trustworthy. I put up the quote at the top from Franklin Sanders, all government money comes with a sock in the jaw. And I end the commentary with a statement. Let me just read it to you. When you were young, your mother told you not to talk or get into cars with strangers. That was good advice. Follow it. Stop supporting the creation of new legal and contractual agreements with strangers who exist behind a wall of secrecy and who don't keep their agreements. So anytime we agree to another legal and contractual arrangement with these folks, you know, it can't work to our good. What we need to do is get as far away from them as possible. So as far as I'm concerned, until we talk about serious change in leadership, all of this is complete hooey. The NSA has lost an appeal in the Court of Appeals. Apparently, the court has ruled, I haven't had a chance to read the ruling yet, that their phone records program is illegal. And a great subscriber sent it to me, the announcement saying, now it goes underground, black. I wrote back, yep, privatization at the root of the breakaways, and Mr. Global just busted the Americans. Now the game gets really interesting. Another way to see it is the NSA contractors just taught the NSA who is boss. Remember, Snowden worked for a contractor, and what we're literally seeing is a steady chip, chip, chip away, where the surveillance infrastructure doesn't go away, but increasingly our risk is it's controlled by the private guys. Our hero this week is a wonderful man, John Scheer. John works at the Santa Anita Park in California. If you go to the website, last week in the Life section, I put up a wonderful short documentary on John's very famous heroic act, risking his life to save the life of a young child in the path of a racehorse that broke loose from the paddock at Santa Anita, where John works. And you will be very inspired. John and his wife, Diane, are the kind of people that make civilizations great. And it's just an inspiration to watch the story and remember that people like this walk and live among us. We can know them. We can meet them. And our lives are just incredibly richer for their presence. They're the people who create civilization. And I was very inspired to discover that they are also my subscriber. Diane says that John says I'm the voice of reason. And I have to say, I've never received a higher compliment. So Hero of the Week, John Scheer, take a look at E60 Scheer. Ask Catherine. We have some great questions this week. First and foremost, thank you for your great service. As you have coined, anything can happen. I believe that your forecast of a crash up scenario is highly probable. That's a crash up in the equity markets as money spills out, water falls out of the bond market. Well, let me finish this question, then I'll go back. Could you give us your best guess as to what could happen in the precious metal sector and energy sector in your crash up hypothesis? Yes, it's possible that we get a crash up, and I think that's the more likely scenario. We could also end up in a deflationary scenario, sort of a spiral down. So I want you to give some kind of probability to that, and we have to keep our eye on making sure if that gets going, we get out of its way and don't sit around just hoping for a crash up. So remember, deflationary spiral, some possibility of that. But yeah, I do think the crash up is highest. If you look at what could happen in the precious metal sector, in a crash up scenario, you could either have a plateau in prices or the primary trend reassert. My only concern is if we could get dips before the primary trend reasserts down to as low as 1,100 to 700. In a deflationary spiral, gold could definitely go down to 700, particularly as interest rates rise. So I would stick, if you go to the blog, you will see a commentary that I wrote approximately a year and a half ago called "What Percentage of My Assets Should I Hold in Precious Metals?" And I think that is basically my fundamental advice until and unless the primary trend reasserts. And we're just going to have to keep watching it. Essentially, what I say is precious metals is central bank insurance. It's a core position. You have a core position. You don't worry about the price. But until we see the primary trend reassert, I would be very careful about investment positions. The energy sector is the sector that keeps me up at night. In the short term, I think there's a real opportunity in energy that started at the sort of towards the end of last year. And I've been nibbling from the end of last year until, say, February. And my expectation is it can go a little bit higher. So I think short-term energy is one of the few opportunities in the U.S. equity market. However, if you look at what is happening with all sorts of technology in renewables and breakthrough energy technology, I think the chances of shifts, not so much in our use of energy, because shifting the infrastructure takes a long, long time. But shift in equity valuations in the market can come much faster than the shifts in the infrastructure. And so when it comes to big investments in things like LNG and oil, I'm skittish in the intermediate long term, and I just keep watching different announcements. For example, we had Elon Musk come out this last week and announce the Tesla Power Pack that you can put up on your wall. And he's got a Tesla Power Pack for industrial application, which can apparently be stacked. So this is clearly new and young. We don't know how much he can produce. But as he said before, he's allowing the patents to be open source so that anybody can do this. And I think if you look at innovations like this, and there are hundreds of them, we could really see some power shifting in the equity valuations area. So short term, very positive, intermediate term, skittish. And it's one of those things I don't know how to predict except to watch, because what technology is permitted is to a certain extent very politically driven. When you don't even know who's running thing, who knows what could happen. And I think we need to watch that across the board. The steady shift of technology, both energy and communication technology, can change equity valuations across every sector. So we're coming into a real sort of jump the curve situation. Next question. You have often mentioned the need for companies to jump the curve to get to a global 3.0 state. I was wondering if we have the opportunity to influence municipal, county, state, or federal governments or organizations, what should we do to get them to make the jump to 3.0? If you could suggest any books or articles on this topic, that would be very helpful. Thank you. What a great question. I really appreciate that. I'm going to do some research to find examples for municipal, county, and state. I'll start there first. Many involve building resiliency by doing one of several things. One is integrating new technology into infrastructure. There's a wonderful example of the Portland water supply system putting energy turbines into the water pipes. It's a perfect example of stacking functions. Another great example is building local supplies of fresh food and natural health alternatives. And I've put up some wonderful TED speeches, particularly one of a group in England that really just had an extraordinary renaissance of gardening and fresh food all over local community. And then there's a great deal to be done with facilitating local equity. The SEC has announced that they're going to promulgate, or there's an indication the SEC is going to promulgate the crowdfunding finally this year. Depending on how that looks, there's a lot that state and local government can do working with local small business to encourage the facilitation of local equity. And it gets very powerful when you build internships with that attract sort of the young people to stay in the area and help build up the financial and intellectual capacity of the local business community. And there's a lot you can do with stock options and in internships working with local community colleges. So those are three examples of the kind of things that build resiliency. But that's a great question, and I'm going to do some research and see if I can't come back with something much more detailed and responsive. Great question. Whitley Strieber, I never once heard him mention global spraying. What is up with that? That's an excellent question. It was a mission on my part that I didn't ask Whitley about that. I just very much wanted him to unload his impressions of what we were missing in his analysis. Speaking of global spraying, I just posted a new, really good USA Watchdog video with Dane Wigington on geoengineering. Greg Hunter had him on, which I thought was terrific. Hi, Catherine. Many thanks to you and your staff for an extremely informative, lively, and delicious 21 Club luncheon. Never know what to think of these reports, no matter what, but value your opinion. And then they sent a series of links to people discussing the alien and UFO question, and I will take a look at those. I never know what to make of them. That's why I pretty much depend on a couple of other people like Dolan and Farrell to tell me sort of what's useful and what's not in that area. It's just money. My beat is my tool to understand if things make sense or not is money. And it's a phenomena that simply does not lend itself to that kind of analysis. Dear Catherine, in this 30-minute video, we're shown some stunning weather maps and other information building a strong case that geoengineering is causing the drought in California and the strange, bizarre weather in other parts of the country. Since I know you follow the subject, I wanted to pass the information on. Thanks for that. Yes, I think that geoengineering is affecting the weather patterns. Jeff Rentz follows both geoengineering and Fukushima very intensely, and he believes that the drought in California is an effort using geoengineering to keep the radiation from being rained onto California. They're trying to make sure that it gets dumped into the ocean before it hits California. I don't know if that's true, but it's one possible explanation. Dear Catherine, in your opinion, how much influence do the powers that be have in creating all of these boom and bust economic cycles that we've all experienced? A great deal. Whenever you're operating in a fiat currency system with invisible leadership behind a one-way mirror and you run these boom and bust cycles, I'm not saying 100% is managed, but it's extraordinary how much is. It's essentially a harvesting system. Now, the reality is there is an enormous amount that people could do to improve our immune system. And so the general population has not gotten smart about this. And so that's the big question coming into the next 10 years. Can we build sufficient consciousness? Because the reality is if we shift our consciousness, it shifts the whole game. Dear Catherine, my wife Bonnie and I look very much forward to having lunch with you this Saturday. They're referring to the lunch in New York. You've been a big influence on us since we started our subscription in 2008. And then they suggest that I get Anita Hoag and Charlotte Isserbitt on about Common Core. That's a great suggestion. And in fact, I've been thinking of having one or both of them. So I thank you for that. And they also mentioned a video of Simon Parks. I had posted one of Simon's videos. He's a local legislator and government official in Britain who claims to have had alien experiences and has a lot of information. Again, I never know what to how to judge these things. Again, they don't lend themselves to my analytics. Let's go to the movies. I wanted to suggest, many years ago, I rode a bicycle cross country before going to work on Wall Street. It was the summer before I went to Wall Street. And one of the things that inspired me to do it was a National Geographic story about Robin Davidson's 9-month journey with camels across the Australian desert, just herself and her dog and a pack of camels. In fact, it was very interesting. My father tried to talk me out of doing the bicycle trip. And at one point, he looked at me mournfully across the dinner table and he said, you know, because I brought the National Geographic to him. And I said, look, you know, I'll never be 20 minutes away from a bathroom. It's not like I'm walking across the Kalahari or anything. And I showed him the spread National Geographic and he looked up at me and he said, if I buy you a camel, will you promise me not to go? And so I named my bicycle the Blue Camel. And frankly, it was one of the most rewarding experiences of my life so far. And I'm looking forward to being in Alice Springs next week, which is where essentially Robin Davis's journey began. So we're coming full circle. Anyway, someone made a movie of it called Tracks in 2014. I had an opportunity to watch it 2 weeks ago. It's a marvelous story, very inspiring. So take a look. Our interview this week is with one of my favorite guests, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who's a visiting professor at the College of William and Mary, who's had a very distinguished career in the military and then working for General Colin Powell, both at the Joint Chiefs of Staff and then when he was Secretary of the State. And Wilkerson has absolutely defined himself by being absolutely fearless in his public comments. He was a helicopter pilot. And my, I don't know why I love helicopter pilots, it would appear, but they're all fearless as far as I can tell. And he's been quoted regularly on TV. If anybody wants to indict Dick Cheney, he's happy to testify against them. So this is a man with enormous courage. And we had a wonderful discussion, not only about the national security issues facing the United States, but the questions of leadership that, as you know, I'm very concerned about. So just a wonderful assessment of where we are as a country and the kind of changes that need to happen. In closing, I did an interview with Greg Hunter of USA Watchdog, which is up on the website. And in it, it's interesting, he's always focused on, you know, is it going to be collapse or war? And this time I got him to admit, yes, there are three possibilities, collapse, war, change. And I need to keep, it reminded me that I need to keep reminding everyone that a profound shift in culture and behavior on the parts of everyone in the United States and globally can change this. If we just decide we're not going to participate in activities that are destructive to civilization and destructive to the economy, a very centralized system can't function if we won't implement it, because it's all of us who are making it go and implementing it day to day. So if we shift, the system will shift. And I finally got Greg to admit that, yes, there were three options, collapse, war, and change was possible. So speaking of that, we have three great Solari reports coming up. May 14th, Common Core with Anthony Cody. And then I'll be doing Money and Markets from Uluru, Ayers Rock in Australia. Then May 21st, The Global Financial System with James Turk. And I'll be again talking to you from Sydney. And then May 28th, Creative Destruction, launching a breakthrough product with Mark Dancy, No Money in Markets that week. And then I'll be talking with you from Sydney the following week. So again, I'll be speaking in Sydney June 2nd and Auckland May 23rd. If you're not going to be there, send it to your friends down under. So please remember, until we talk again next week, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.